20 days, one historic move, an unbelievable journey. Melania from the Amazon MGM Studios captures the one-of-a-kind transition into the White House, showcasing the planning, the pressure, and personal moments that come with stepping into the role of the First Lady for a second time. From logistical complexities to decisions made behind closed doors, the film brings you closer to Mrs. Trump and her family as they return to the nation's capital. See what history looks like before the doors officially open. Melania arrives exclusively in theaters January 30th, 2026. Massive news emerging from Davos. Normally a sleepy economics meeting between the rich, the famous, and the really rich and the really famous is now dominated by Donald Trump. His first mission was to quell the uproar over Greenland with a deal, then a board of peace, plus Gavin Newsom and Al Gore embarrassing themselves in the backdrop. A guy that never embarrassed himself joins us now, Josh Holmes. Josh, welcome back.
Kill me. Good to talk to you, buddy. Approachable man in radio, is that what we're calling you
right
now?
Now, is there a battle? Is there you want to be second? Most approachable person?
Well, I don't know. I mean, do people know how difficult you are?
No, they don't until now. And then you just spilled the video. Hey, Josh, I got to just tell you, I looked at Bloomberg today. We don't have any details of the Greenland deal, but this is what has emerged. There's changes to the 1951 treaty to guarantee U.S. military base requirements. It strengthens NATO's role in the Arctic and High North. It will include a multinational NATO command in Greenland led by us. An economic component to be negotiated, including mining rights, which I know we want, and measures to stop Russia and China's economic and military presence in Greenland. So I imagine, do we all agree it's a no-go land for them? And the U.S. stops threatening tariffs on Europe, which sounds like a pretty good framework.
Yeah, well, the markets certainly liked it. I think that the Secretary General of NATO, Mark Rutte, has got one of the most constructive working relationships with President Trump of any world leader going all the way back to the first term. It seems as though almost nobody else knows how to handle what it is that President Trump is driving at and what his real concerns are with Greenland or almost anything else. But it started with the NATO budget and trying to increase all of that. But consistently what you see is when this gentleman sits down with President Trump, things get worked out pretty darn quickly. And of course, President Trump's primary concern was the safety and security of the Arctic region, and Greenland included. And it seems like they're on a path to fix all of that.
So listen to some of the anger that came out yesterday, and tell me what you think. It begins with Mark Carney of Canada, goes to Macron, back to Carney, and more Carney. This is his moment to shine with his backwards country with almost no military that sold their soul to China. But I digress. Cut 12.
But more recently, great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons. Tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited.
We do prefer respect to bullies. We do prefer science to plotism. And we do prefer rule of law to brutality.
Argue the middle powers must act together because if we're not at the table, we're on the menu.
Right now we are talking about a situation about the world order. Respect for territorial integrity. Respect for international law.
But when we only negotiate bilaterally with a hegemon, we negotiate from weakness. We accept what's offered. We compete with each other to be the most accommodating. This is not sovereignty. It's the performance of sovereignty while accepting subordination.
I mean, a lot of them seem to have walked that back. The EU is going to decide whether they're going to keep the EU deal in place. I'm sure they will. I think they will. What are your thoughts about us being Donald Trump and America being ripped like that?
Yeah, what they want is for America to be subordinate in every possible way. They want to take advantage economically of the American people as they have for 80 years in a way where the American consumer and the American worker is entirely punished by whatever it is that they levy on us. And then we turn around and have to be the world's policeman every time they get into any sort of trouble anywhere. They want to rely on the strength of America, both in our markets and our military, but they don't want to give anything up for it. And there's been president after president for generations who sort of didn't want to ruffle the feathers of anybody. They'd rather have a good quote-unquote relationship where they read each other's talking points rather than do anything about it. And I give President Trump a lot of credit. Look, it's not easy, and of course it's going to make markets nervous and world leaders nervous, but at the end of the day, you do get a better deal for the American people, and I think these people are obviously pissed about it because it comes out of their hide a little bit.
I love this, and I know you've seen this, but it's worth having our audience share this. Scott Bessin opens up on Gavin Newsom. He's putting on a sideshow in the background. Cut 18.
The California governor calls you smug. Are you smug?
Yeah, you know, I think it's very, very ironic that, you know, Governor Newsom, who strikes me as Patrick Bateman meets Sparkle Beach Ken, may be the only Californian who knows less about economics than Kamala Harris. He's here this week with his billionaire sugar daddy, Alex Soros, and the Davos is a perfect place for a man who, when everyone else was on lockdown, when he was having people arrested for going to church, he was having $1,000-a-night meals at the French Laundry, and I'm sure the California people won't forget that.
Wow. How great is that?
Listen, Bessin is a badass. Kill me. This guy, not only does he know what he's talking about in terms of the economics, I think consistently in this administration, he's the most powerful spokesperson they have for what they're trying to do. But he's tough, man. You don't want to come at him with anything.
I mean, he hit Elon Musk. He knocked him in, he knocked him in the hall, remember?
I think there are like two or three cabinet officials who've taken a knuckle sandwich from Bessin.
Right.
I mean, this guy's tough, and he shows it time and time again. I mean, there he is on the world stage. And somebody asked him about a slight. Well, I mean, he's coming back with an absolute cannonball.
Right.
And he just destroyed Gavin Newsom.
I want you to hear what Newsom said back. Cut 19.
The Treasury Secretary talked about a Barbie doll. It was as if he was reading a diary and had just broken up with someone. I mean, that was the Secretary of Treasury using valuable time yesterday on the world stage.
So I guess that's his comeback.
I mean, no laughs, right? It's just like
he was
the state
asked about
audience.
It.
Newsom, also, I love that Newsom has this like faux masculinity thing going. Like every time he wants to show that he's tough, he like, oh, it's a Barbie doll. He tries to have this like masculine performance of what it, and meanwhile, he is just an utter failure in every regard. And, you know, I hope the guy runs for president. I know Democrats think that he's like, you know, a good face for him. But that the fraud that is Gavin Newsom will be exposed on a national stage, and he richly deserves it.
Well, the thing is, he's going to get cut up by Democrats first before Republicans get him. And I don't know how he survives that, because if I'm running against him, I do a deep background check like you used to do, Josh. I mean, if Senator McConnell had tough races. So you got to find out what the vulnerability is. And I mean, there is so much out there. Then see Democrats, maybe eight on a stage. And if they think he belongs in the center square, it's going to be open season. And I don't think he could smile and giggle his way out of that. But I think that's, you know, pretty clear. The other thing is, did you hear these reports about Al Gore sighing and heckling Lutnick while he's there? I mean, because we're not buying into his green scam, which is on tape. The world should have ended 10 years ago by now. The world has a fever.
I was shocked that Al Gore was still around.
I know.
I thought maybe he followed his own prophecy and the world would be over and he'd be done by now.
No, he's making too much money, Josh. He made a ton of money off all this.
Yeah, no. Yeah, when you sell a scam like that, you gotta cash in while you can. And of course, no better place to do that than Davos, where you've got a bunch of gullible world leaders that'll follow his lead into economic damnation for the entire globe.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Right. So when we look at right now, I've been looking at all these experts, and you're one of them, that have come out and basically think the House is lost so far. And the president says, I'm going to run like I'm on. We heard Susie Wiles yesterday that she says he's going to run like he's on the ticket, and it starts in Iowa this week. I just think there's so much of the game to be played.
Totally.
That how can you possibly call it either way now? Even if they said Republicans were up 4 in the generic poll, I'd be like, so? This is so early, but you're so experienced. I remember Paul Ryan looked at this thing 2 years out and said, I'm not going to be speaker anymore, but I'll just finish out the string. And I thought, what did he say? Like, what am I missing? Why do people so fatalistic about this?
Well, you have the historical backdrop of any party in power, particularly when you've got, you know, all three branches of elected government, that you typically don't do very well in your first midterm. And that's pretty uniform over the last 100-plus years. So, and part of that is because your midterm elections is a different turnout model. And the one struggle that we've had in the era of Trump is he's got a huge base of voters that show up when his name's on the ballot and not so much in the midterms or when his name's not on the ballot. And that's a real challenge that Republicans are going to have to confront. I mean, they're going to have to reverse a trend that followed in 2018 and 2022 in a very real way. And I think it can be done. To your point, there is a ton that can come out that we can deal with environmentally. If the if the economy is performing, obviously that is a good sign for Republicans. I think there's a lot of things to hang your hat on to suggest the infrastructure was put in place last year for a real economic triumph of this administration. That certainly helps.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, there's things that happen that aren't predictable. For example, Josh, as smart as you are, I never remember you last year saying, whoever gets Greenland will win the election. the whole thing's caught me by surprise. But I love this. The socialists on the left and the rock star who just got embraced and they fawned over him on The View. He's getting other Democrats upset by saying things like this. Cut 32.
I'll say it again. I continue to believe that now is the time to increase taxes on the most profitable corporations that do business in New York and the wealthiest residents that call this city home so that they pay their fair share so that we can create a city that delivers for all of us. What we are talking about here is New Yorkers who make $1 million a year or more increasing their personal income taxes by 2%. I spoke to one New Yorker just the other day who identified themselves as making more than $1 million. They said, is it true you want to increase my taxes? I said, yes.
Great. So run on that, baby. Go for it.
I'm glad you brought this up, Killamy, because I think that this is it ties into our previous conversation about what the midterms look like. You know, over the last 6 to 8 months, every Democrat pundit in America has been trying to get out from underneath the Mamdani deal. We're not a bunch of socialists. That's not the new face of the Democratic Party, despite the fact that the policies all basically echo what he's saying there from every segment of the economy. And then they're like, no, the new faces are Abigail Spanberger, moderate governor from Virginia, or Mickey Sherrill, moderate from New Jersey. Like, this is what the Democratic Party is going to run on. Okay, so what do? They're there for 24 hours. Both of those governors start attacking ICE. They inform their state law enforcement they can no longer participate with federal law enforcement with criminal illegals, people who are convicted of rape, pedophilia, murder. They're no longer participating in any of this. And then you saw a litany of the economic agenda that they are wrapping their heads around. I guess my point is this. There is no such thing as a moderate Democrat anymore.
Yeah.
Kill me. There just isn't, because it doesn't matter what they say or how they present. When they govern, there's not a dime's worth of difference between Abigail Spanberger and what you just heard from Mamdani.
Yeah, you're looking to undo everything Governor Youngkin did. When do we see the next episode of Ruthless?
Well, we got one up today, and you'll get another one tomorrow. I mean, we're working hard, not as hard as Killmead.
Right.
But we're working pretty darn hard. We got to get the content out there. We have Tom Homan on the program today.
Nice.
Brooke Rollins, the Secretary of Agriculture, on the program. We have a lot of good chats and some yucks. You know how we like to laugh.
I know. But the biggest story is what? With Sunday at 10 o'clock, you're going to be on One Nation. That's where you're saving your best stuff for.
Well, of course. You want to. I mean, these are all hierarchical in terms of how you hold back a little bit of talent,
if you don't mind,
just for the big stuff.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hold back on your podcast for my show. That's all I ask, Josh. That's not too much.
We seek to please. Seek to please.
And thanks for dressing up too. I mean, I get so I get the dress down, Josh.
Do you wake up in the suit?
Yes.
Tell me.
Yes.
Yeah, you like so
it's
open
a zip
your
on
eyes
right
and
up the back. Right. Brett Baer calls, you put on a suit, you get some makeup on the way. Not with me. Grab my cap. Same hair as yesterday.
I just feel so comfortable.
Yeah.
I just feel
well,
so
that's
comfortable.
Good. Maybe
you.
It's a compliment. Josh, thanks so much. He's co-host of Ruthless Podcast. Josh Holmes, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
You're the man.